This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. 7:06 a.m. Wednesday, the 30th of December. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Wong Kah Chun, Disruptive Events Advisory Leader at Deloitte Malaysia, on the country's biggest IPOs this year. But before that, we are taking a look over at the markets.
Yes, just looking very quickly in the US, the Dow and S&P 500 both closed down 0.2%. NASDAQ closed down 0.4%. And in Asia, rather mixed. The Nikkei 225 closed up 2.7%. Hang Seng closed up 1%. Korea was up 0.4%. SDI closed up 0.3%. Shanghai Composite, however, was down 0.5%. Our FBM KLCI likewise down about 0.5%.
And this morning, for some insight into global markets, we are speaking with Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy over at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Now, globally, stock indices are trending upwards again. Are animal spirits back in equity markets, or is policy stimulus or vaccine exuberance driving this positive momentum?
Well, I think, you know, going into this part of the year, markets have got a mix of two things going on with them. First, there is a continuation of the belief that vaccine rollout will lead eventually to demand recovery. And I think some of that continues to be priced in, albeit pretty fluidly, depending on how, coincidentally, you know, at the same time, you've also got an outbreak of a more virulent virus. So that's one thing that's going on. But equally, any new stimulus coming in is also pushing markets up. So these forces are driving whether you get more allocation into the cyclical recovery story, or you do just get a broad lift due to the sheer liquidity. All of this, I think, is still contingent on the fact that, you know, going into the close, markets are torn between the fear of missing out and not being too exposed as they look forward to the Georgia runoff and other risks that arise early next year.
And I just want to take your mind to the UK. It appears that the current Brexit deal does not offer much clarity on the future of the UK's financial services industry. What's the implication of this on the UK economy, given that that industry is so such a big part of their system post-Brexit? And do you expect it will be a major theme in 2021 and continue to weigh on the pound sterling?
Yeah, I have to thank you for answering the question for me, essentially, because that's really the salient point here. Whilst the standoff during the negotiations was all centered on things like fishing rights and so on and so forth, it's really the service sector, and in particular the financial sector in the UK, that has been the backbone of the economy. And having no clarity on that means that there will be some turmoil around any uncertainty with regards to the service sector deal that the UK manages to ring out with the EU. So I think going forward in 2021, as you have said rightly, this will continue to be a focus, and it will at the margin push the sterling around depending on where the negotiations are. And we know from experience that there's going to be a lot of noise and volatility around this.
And Vishnu, looking across the pond from the UK, as we're speaking, there seems to be some back and forth between Congress, the Senate and the White House in getting the spending bill through, and the various permutations seems to be going on there. When you look at this messy situation, how does this factor into your own outlook for the US economy in the short term?
Well, in the short term, I think the US economy will be on a very fragile and bumpy recovery, purely because even as, there's a lot of hand-wringing around what kind of fiscal stimulus will be coming in to fill the gaps of monetary policy, even as that question lingers, and that's an economic question, we cannot forget that, new infections in the U.S. are getting worse. So there's also the fear of economic activity inadvertently retarded, whether by just sheer infections and hospitals being maxed out or very nuanced but targeted restrictions coming in again. So the first half looks like a very much more arduous recovery for the US.
Now, Vishnu, oil demand is only forecasted to recover in 2022 due to low demand for jet fuel. Would you agree with this estimate? And do you foresee further volatility for oil prices, or has it perhaps found support at these levels?
I think oil prices will remain a little bit more bumpy, but with a good backstop for it, primarily because what we've seen so far is that insofar that we don't get large positive supply shocks in oil, and that's specifically referring to OPEC suddenly restoring a lot of the cuts, or shale catching up in a very fast manner. So, barring these two events, which are fairly unlikely, what we've seen is that oil has become quite sensitive to any demand recovery story in here. So over the course of 2020, there can be some potential for meaningful upside in oil prices, though it is correct that until full clarity is seen, especially with global herd immunity becoming the holy grail for restoration of air travel on a more holistic basis, when that comes into view, and one need not wait till 2022 for that to be fully restored, just that coming into view could give oil another leg up. But we don't think oil prices will go through the roof either, mainly because that's where supply starts to respond to prices rising.
Right. And Vishnu, beyond the paying attention to the pandemic and the virus count and that impact on demand, what are the key things to watch when it comes to oil prices in 2021 between OPEC and other things like that?
I think the thing that really came up with OPEC was the divide within about who needs the volume restoration more badly. So I think the main thing to watch with respect to OPEC, there will be two things, I think. First would be how the balance of power and negotiations plays out in terms of the pace of restoration, whether they are taking a longer view or the imminent pain is too much and the pressure to produce more starts to overtake. So that's the first thing. And the other, rather than being within the OPEC, is also how the OPEC deems and wants to deal with shale response. So if OPEC wants to, so that remains to be seen whether they want to take a more aggressive stance in trying to take over volume, in which case price must give, or they are willing to bear a bit of the pain in terms of market share but want to maintain prices. So these two dynamics remain quite important going into 2021-22.
Well, before we send you off and wish you Happy New Year, just one more question. Japan's industrial production dipped in November after rising for something like five straight months. What caused that fall and what is your outlook for its industrial output?
I think, without any context, a month's lull after 5 months of expansion may just be industries acclimatizing, and so one shouldn't be, too spooked by it. But given the context, which is I think a lot of the exports to US and Europe dwindled, and also even to China, I think the gains in exports also started wavering somewhat. That is suggestive of the fact that a resurgence of the virus and I think some demand checking going on around the world means that the recovery overall remains quite contingent on a more unfettered recovery out of this hole that we're in. So that's a timely reminder that we're not out of the woods yet.
Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Vishnu. And as Noel said, Happy New Year as we head into 2021. That was Vishnu Varadhan, Head of Economics and Strategy over at Mizuho Bank, talking to us about the variety of news pieces we've had crossing our desks this morning. And of course, sounding a bit of an alarm over OPEC, which as the start of the year has indicated, has shown some volatility so far in 2020.
Yeah, so the vaccine is being distributed in 2021, but I think it'd be too optimistic to say we're going back to the good old days of pre-COVID-19. Like what he's saying, I think economic recovery may be fragile as businesses pick up the pieces. But one thing we know, Amazon had a really roaring year, right? The surge in online shopping triggered by the pandemic has put Amazon on course for its first ever $100 billion quarter. And it has also boosted an overlooked part of the company's business, which is advertising.
Yeah, typically when we think about the big tech companies and advertising, it's Facebook's and the Facebook and the Googles, right? But Amazon also has a small advertising unit that has been growing significantly. Now, how small? Well, if you take a look at their earnings, let's look at the third quarter, they made $96 billion in revenue. Their others category made $5.4 billion, which is about 5.6% of the business. So it's small, but it is growing. The biggest businesses are their online stores, which are still 50% of business, and third-party seller services at 21%. AWS is at 12% right now, but it's also a very profitable unit for them. So this is going to be interesting to see how how the other players, whether it chips away at Facebook and Amazon and Google's, or I think more Google's advertising dominance in this regard when it comes to search.
Yeah, I think Amazon offers advertisers a significant amount of data and in terms of a closed loop that shows them how effective every dollar that they spend is, as well as more than two decades of insight into the buying habits of its consumers rather than just their web browsing habits. So we'll see how this advertising unit of Amazon's continues to grow, considering it's growing at a faster pace than a lot of, than even its retail segment. But right now we have some messages coming up for you. And up next, speaking with Wong Kar Chun, Disrupt Events Advisory Leader at Deloitte Malaysia, on the country's biggest IPOs this year. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.